UST. Together, we build for boundless impact.
Russian President Vladimir Putin links Ukraine and Nazi Germany during World War II commemorations in Moscow, but stops shy of making any major announcements.
I think what we can most likely glean from this is that the campaign is likely to continue in the way it has so far, which is kind of a stalled Russian campaign.
Plus, crypto prices slump over the weekend as digital currencies increasingly mirror markets, and inflation hits hospitals amid rising costs. It's Monday, May 9th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Russia has marked the anniversary of the Soviet Union's defeat of Nazi Germany during World War II with elaborate commemorations in the capital, Moscow, today. President Vladimir Putin addressed those gathered in Red Square, using his remarks to describe Russia's campaign in Ukraine as being a forced response to Western policies. Putin also linked Russian actions in Ukraine with the fight against Nazi troops in World War II, but did not make any major announcements about the war, as some had predicted. We'll have more on what else Putin's comments, or lack thereof, about the war in Ukraine could tell us later in the show. Japan said today it will phase out and eventually ban the import of Russian oil. WSJ Tokyo Bureau Chief Peter Landers says the oil reversal followed a meeting of the Group of Seven Nations over the weekend and comes a week after Japan signaled it would push ahead with a Russian natural gas project.
I think doubts are growing as to whether that project or even the current gas imports can stay for much longer. In the case of oil, you had the Group of Seven Nations on Sunday saying no more imports from Russia, and Japan is part of that group alongside the U.S. and Germany, and it felt obliged to follow what everyone else was doing. If the G7 does the same on natural gas, which is quite possible, you'd have the same picture.
In the U.S., 20 internet providers, including AT&T, Comcast, and Verizon, have agreed to offer high-speed internet to millions of unconnected and low-income households, according to Biden administration officials. Officials said the companies, which cover more than 80% of the U.S. population, had agreed to increase their internet speeds or cut prices to ensure that all eligible households can tap into high-speed internet plans for no more than $30 per month. The program is part of the roughly $1 trillion infrastructure law approved by Congress last year. And crypto prices slumped over the weekend as the world's largest cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, slid during Sunday trading below $34,000, about half of its all-time high in November. Ethereum, the second largest cryptocurrency, saw a decline of 5.1% from its Friday trading. WSJ Markets reporter Caitlin McCabe says that investors who once hoped cryptocurrency could offer a hedge against broader market dynamics now face a changed landscape.
So years ago, crypto was dominated by individual investors. But now that more professional investors are involved, like hedge funds and money managers, they're treating cryptocurrencies as riskier assets. And we're seeing them very much moving in tandem with the stock market.
Some hospitals in the U.S. are now seeking to raise prices by up to 15%, citing rising salaries for nurses, and in the process setting off contract fights with insurers and businesses. Joining us now with more on who is likely to prevail in this standoff and where it could leave people who need care is WSJ Hospitals reporter Melanie Evans, who brought us this exclusive story. Melanie, thank you for being with us. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
What is driving this inflation you are reporting on in the healthcare space?
So about 50% of what hospitals spend to provide medical care, they're spending it on labor. They're paying nurses and custodians and the staff that deliver meals and move patients around. And as we know, the job market right now is incredibly hot for pretty much any job. So hospitals are seeing their wages go up, and that's driving up their overall cost to deliver medical care. So that is a big driver of what hospitals are seeing. Now, they are also seeing some inflationary pressure on the products that they buy, the things, the stuff that they need to take care of people, but labor is the biggest expense. It's 50% typically of a hospital's budget. So hospitals are asking for prices to go up 7.5% to 15%. That's more than what is typical, which might be between like 4 and 6% a year, according to insurers and employers that I've spoken with. So that could mean higher premiums for people who get insurance through a job.
And Melanie, if prices eventually do go up, what could the effect be for Americans who already turned down treatment for cost reasons should they see further healthcare inflation?
Absolutely. There are federal studies that look at the very real burden of medical debt and then the choices people make when they are worried about the cost of healthcare. And as you said, some people may not get care they need because of the price. And that burden of medical debt only goes up when prices go up. Now, some people have insurance and the insurance covers some of that price increase. But one of the ways that employers have tried to sort of manage their own costs is by increasing deductibles, right? And that means somebody who is already struggling to pay a medical bill now has to pay sort of a larger share of it, which could be a real problem for people who are already struggling to pay for medical care.
That was WSJ Hospitals reporter Melanie Evans. Melanie, thank you for the update.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Coming up, Russian President Vladimir Putin presents his view of the war in Ukraine during today's commemorations of the defeat of Nazi Germany in World War II. We'll have that story after the break.
Enter a revolutionary business world where AI meets power with Intel Core Ultra and Intel vPro. Imagine PCs that boost productivity, creativity, and collaboration with cutting-edge AI. They're gateways to innovation, engineered with powerful AI performance, hardware-based security, and AI-powered threat detection. Plus, they're built sustainably and can be managed remotely. Transform your workflow with Intel Core Ultra and Intel vPro today. No product can be absolutely secure. Become an IT hero at intel.com/IT heroes.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has delivered remarks during Moscow's commemorations today of the end of World War II without making any major announcements regarding the war in Ukraine, as many in the West were expecting. WSJ Moscow reporter Matthew Luxmore joins us now with more. Matthew, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So what was President Putin's message in his speech today?
Well, in many ways, it was kind of anticlimactic. A lot of people expected him to make some kind of major announcement today, perhaps a mobilization in Russia and a declaration of full-scale war in Ukraine, as opposed to the limited special military operation he's been talking about so far. But in many ways, it was kind of a generic Victory Day speech for Putin, a speech he gives every year, which consists of greeting Russia's few remaining World War II veterans, talking up the Soviet victory over invading Nazi forces at the loss of millions of lives, and also really railing against NATO expansion and the West, which we saw a much kind of stronger element of this year. So really, other than a kind of nod to the current campaign in Ukraine and this parallel he's been drawing since the start of this campaign between the campaign the Soviet Union waged in 1945 and the war Russia is prosecuting now, there wasn't really that much that stood out. And it was, I think, went against the expectations of many analysts about what he might announce today.
Yeah, what conclusion do you think we can draw from that? As you mentioned, many analysts had expected possibly some big announcements today.
So Putin didn't announce an end to what Russia calls its special military operation. He didn't announce an intensification of it or indeed an expansion of its aims or officially declare war as some had expected, which would have given him the justification for a full mobilization in Russia. So I think what we can most likely glean from this is that the campaign is likely to roughly continue in the way it has so far, which is kind of a stalled Russian offensive. This is obviously not the way that this so-called special military operation in Ukraine is being portrayed to the Russian population through state TV reports and state-controlled media coverage. But I think based on Putin's speech today, insofar as we can really draw any conclusions from it, I think we can probably expect that there is not going to be an end to this campaign in Ukraine anytime soon.
Matthew, President Putin focused on the Donbas and Crimea within his remarks without mentioning Ukraine. What, if anything, do you think that tells us?
Well, I wouldn't personally draw too many conclusions from that. This is roughly consistent with Putin's narrative on this campaign in Ukraine, which he has portrayed from the start, again, as a special military operation focused mainly on the east of the country and on, as he puts it, defending the Russian-speaking population of East Ukraine from what he says are the nationalists running the government in Kiev and discriminating against those people in the east. So from the start, Russia has really announced fairly limited aims for its campaign in Ukraine. Obviously, the realities of the ground in Ukraine, especially if you ask any person in Ukraine, are very, very different. And we've seen that Russia's campaign has stretched far beyond the east. So this kind of narrative that the Kremlin is advancing as far as its campaign in Ukraine goes allows it to, I guess, fail in its broader objectives in other parts of Ukraine, while at the same time maintaining this notion that its aims were always, from the start, limited to the east.
Why was so much expectation placed on this specific day and this specific speech by President Putin, and what should we expect going forward?
Well, Victory Day in Russia, May 9th, is really the biggest holiday in the country, other than New Year's Eve, which obviously has a very different significance for Russians. There's always an expectation of a huge military parade, not only in Moscow, indeed, but across the country, and a big speech by Putin. And for Ukrainians, at a time when Russia is waging a war that it is specifically portraying as a continuation of the campaign that its forefathers waged in 1945, those constant parallels being made by Putin and other senior Russian officials between the two wars definitely put Ukrainians on edge and kind of encouraged this expectation that on Victory Day, 77 years after that previous victory, Putin may announce a victory in this war or indeed can expand the aims of it. So there was a huge amount of symbolism involved in today's celebrations. And I think rightly and justifiably, many Ukrainians and their Western allies were worried that Putin would use this day to kind of exploit that symbolism and make some kind of announcement or at least kind of bolster those parallels that he's been drawing all along.
That was WSJ Moscow reporter Matthew Luxmore. Matthew, thank you so much for the update.
Sure, no problem. Thanks for having me.
And finally, almost every company has one, a master of failing their way up the corporate ladder. WSJ On the Clock columnist Callum Borscher says coworkers often fail to see how that same person who massively underbudgeted for an account actually saved the business through savvy client relations and demonstrated skillful damage mitigation in the process. But he admits that doesn't make working with a fail-up master any less frustrating, especially as work returns to their home court.
They do their best work face-to-face, getting the last word in the meeting or sort of repackaging what somebody else said but making it sound original. They're the backslappers, the handshakers, the big smilers, harder to pull off over a Zoom call. And so some of the workers who really liked the productivity-focused pandemic work style, all of a sudden they're noticing again, there's that person who maybe isn't the most skilled or isn't the hardest worker, but they're thriving again in the schmoozy in-office environment.
And that's What's News for Monday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
Enter a revolutionary business world where AI meets power with Intel Core Ultra and Intel vPro. Imagine PCs that boost productivity, creativity, and collaboration with cutting-edge AI. They're gateways to innovation, engineered with powerful AI performance, hardware-based security, and AI-powered threat detection. Plus, they're built sustainably and can be managed remotely. Transform your workflow with Intel Core Ultra and Intel vPro today. No product can be absolutely secure. Become an IT hero at intel.com/ITHeroes.